This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhiba in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We see tougher and tougher immigration or refugee admission rules. We see in many countries a criminalization of immigrants and refugees, blaming them for everything that has happened.
That was UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi on hostility directed toward refugees around the world. Details coming up. Also, six African leaders soon will head to Moscow and Kiev to try to resolve the Russia-Ukraine conflict. And former U.S. President Trump remains defiant after his not guilty plea to 37 federal felony counts. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Wergana Gbagbo, the executive secretary of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, is urging Sudan's warring factions to cease hostilities and resolve the situation through dialogue. IGAD suggested a new initiative to settle the conflict, including a direct meeting in 2 weeks between Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and his former deputy, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. Kader Haroun, former Sudanese ambassador to the U.S., discussed the prospects of this initiative with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi.
It's not feasible because, you know, a lot of was shed. A lot of people lost their lives, their properties. Women were raped. I don't perceive that the army, which is now enjoying support of the majority of the Sudanese people, would sit again with these people they consider as rebels in order to agree with them again. Because there's something which is very strange that the international community, the regional community, should not equate between the National Army of Sudan with a militia, which is in fact rebels. It was part and parcel of the Sudanese army until April 15, 2023. And they revolt against the Sudanese army. I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody, but the Sudanese consider them from day one that as rebels. They could not sit with them. They put two, just only one option, that they should surrender and allow democratic process to proceed peacefully with the majority of the Sudanese people without exclusion to anybody. The big mistake of the mechanism is that they excluded almost the majority of the Sudanese people and consider only the people from the freedom and justice forces as the stakeholders of democracy in Sudan, which is not true. Many times before, Sudanese people proceed safely in 1964 after the uprising against the dictatorship of General Ibrahim Aboud to democracy in 5 months, after people also uprising against General Jafar Nimeiri. Within 1 year, they were able to restore democracy in Sudan through free and fair election in Sudan. Why is this time, with all these experiences in proceeding from dictatorship to democracy, why is this time? We need all these foreign bodies to come in order to help us in something which we practiced many times before. I wonder what kind of logic is this. I think it won't hold. Sudanese people are very longing to democracy. They experienced it many times before. They do not need a dictatorship, any kind of dictatorship, which is a military dictatorship or a civilian dictatorship. They should be allowed to hold an election and to choose who should govern the Sudan in the future.
Mr. Masr, do you know of any regional or international power backing one side of the two sides to continue that conflict in Sudan?
There is a great suspicion in the country. I do not want to name names, but Sudanese people are well aware for foreign powers that like this war to continue in order to make Sudan a failed state. Sudan is very rich in terms of resources. But I think most of the people in the world now came to know who is behind the whole this mess in Sudan. Sudanese people are capable of resolving their problem, of sitting together again, of moving from this spot to peaceful democratic process.
That was Kader Haroun, Sudan's former ambassador to the U.S., speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. Senior U.S. officials say President Joe Biden's administration remains strongly committed to maintaining cordial relations with Africa. The officials highlighted the progress made over the 6 months since the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Ambassador John Carson is the special presidential representative for the United States Africa Leaders Summit.
I have been engaged in an effort to reach out to African leaders across the continent to determine how their leadership and how their countries view the summit. Without a doubt, the summit has been greatly appreciated by all of those who attended. The leaders are overwhelmingly pleased by what has happened.
Briefing reporters late yesterday in Washington, Ambassador Carson spoke about progress on the business and economic front in recent months.
The number of deals has actually increased to $16.2 billion. These deals have covered a wide range of areas, including infrastructure, healthcare, solar system implementation and establishments, as well as agricultural activities. These represent a commitment by the American business community to work effectively and more progressively with African companies and countries.
Judd Devermont is the National Security Council Senior Director for African Affairs. He gave more details about the achievements so far aimed at strengthening U.S.-Africa relations.
President Biden said that he is all in on Africa, and I think the past 6 months have shown that. One of the biggest announcements was on the digital transformation with Africa. This initiative is an $800 million initiative to invest in the continent's digital future, enabling young people to have the digital literacy and access to get online, to encouraging more investment in the African economies and digital sector.
U.S. policymakers said the outcomes of the summit would deepen the long-term U.S.-Africa partnership while advancing shared priorities. Molly Fee is the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs.
The role of the media in Africa is so important in advancing transparency and accountability. This is a spectacular time to be the Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, given the attention and focus of the U.S. government on seeing what we can do to amplify and expand and rejuvenate our relationship with Africa.
Biden's meeting with the African leaders repositioned Africa's role as a major geopolitical player in tackling challenges such as food insecurity and climate crisis. Since the summit, several senior U.S. officials have visited the continent, and First Lady Jill Biden has made two visits this year. Some foreign policy analysts have noted that Biden's new push to engage with African nations comes as China and Russia continue to expand their presence on the continent. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Others have tried and failed, and now six African leaders are heading to Moscow and Kiev in the coming days to try to resolve the Russia-Ukraine conflict. South Africa, leading the delegation, has been accused of favoring Russia, despite its officially neutral stance on the war. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is leading the delegation, which also includes heads of state from Zambia, the Republic of Congo, Egypt, Senegal, and Uganda. The countries have taken different positions on the war, with South Africa, Uganda, and the Republic of Congo abstaining from a United Nations resolution earlier this year, condemning Russia's 2022 full-scale invasion and demanding it withdraw its troops. Zambia and Egypt voted in favor of the resolution, while Senegal didn't participate. Ramaphosa's spokesman, Vincent Magwenya, said the delegation's trip was imminent, although exact dates were not made public due to security concerns.
We are anticipating that quite imminently a delegation of African heads of states will head to both Ukraine and Russia.
South Africa has been criticized in the West for its warm relations with Moscow, having hosted Russian warships for joint military exercises earlier this year. And last month, the U.S. ambassador to South Africa accused the country of having provided arms to Russia. South Africa denies that weapons were secretly loaded onto Russian vessel the Lady R while it was docked in Cape Town last year, but the controversy has strained relations with Washington. A group of U.S. lawmakers raised questions this week on whether South Africa should still be eligible for trade benefits, and top South African business leaders have also warned the country could pay economically for its stance, raising the possibility of sanctions. Stephen Groost, an analyst at the South African Institute for International Affairs, says it is hard to predict whether the six-leader mission will make a difference. With heavy fighting going on, he says the time is not ripe for negotiations, but adds that any attempt at peacemaking should be welcomed.
It might be a way to distract from the Lady R scandal about South Africa allegedly arming Russia on a ship that was loaded at night in secret, and the other flak that South Africa has been getting. But I do think it's coming from a genuine place of wanting to make a difference.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has welcomed the African leaders' mission, as has Ukraine. But in an online news conference last week, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba warned that some things are non-negotiable.
Any peace initiative should respect the territorial integrity of Ukraine. It should not imply, even among in between the lines, any cessation of Ukrainian territory to Russia. Second, every peace plan should not lead to freezing of the conflict.
Ramaphosa is a seasoned negotiator, having been instrumental in talks that ended apartheid. But so far, peace plans proposed by other countries, including China, have failed, and critics are skeptical the African leaders' mission will achieve much. Meanwhile, the South African government is still mulling over what to do about the upcoming summit of the BRICS Group of Emerging Nations in Johannesburg, which Putin has been invited to attend. With a warrant from the International Criminal Court out against the Russian leader, South Africa would be obliged to arrest him, and there are reports the country is looking for a way out through a legislative amendment to their ICC agreement. South Africa has denied speculation it is considering moving the summit entirely. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Four members of the United States Congress have asked President Joe Biden to effectively punish South Africa for its perceived support of Russia's war against Ukraine. Darren Taylor reports.
In a letter to senior U.S. officials, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken, the congressional representatives suggest an important American-led trade summit scheduled for South Africa be moved because of its deepening military relationship with Russia. The forum of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, is set for Johannesburg in November. AGOA gives 25 African countries privileged access to U.S. markets. South Africa's exports to the U.S. under AGOA reached almost $1 billion in the first 3 months of this year. It's the second biggest beneficiary of the program after Nigeria. Chris Hutton at the Center for Risk Analysis says the call from the American politicians is entirely logical, given the African National Congress government's behavior since Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022.
I think the U.S. would be more comfortable if South Africa practiced active non-alignment. So, for example, if we didn't conduct military exercises with Russia, if we condemned the Russian invasion at various UN votes and resolutions, if we didn't have these allegations of providing ammunition and arms via the Lady R vessel to Russia.
According to U.S. intelligence reports, a Russian ship was loaded with weapons near Cape Town in December. The South African government denies supplying arms to Moscow, and it says it's launched an independent investigation into the allegations. The members of Congress suggest South Africa be expelled from AGOA for allegedly engaging in activities that undermine U.S. national security or foreign policy interests. Economist Tabi Lioka says expulsion from AGOA would spark economic disaster.
We export about $60 billion worth of exports to the U.S. alone, and that is almost 22% of our total exports. Millions of people are employed directly by this relationship that we have with the U.S. So we cannot afford to lose AGOA, but I think that we're working very hard to do so.
In a media statement, presidential spokesperson Vincent Magwenya said any punitive action by the Biden administration would be based on hysteria, hearsay, and contempt for South Africa's sovereignty. His comments were followed by a more tempered audio statement from international relations spokesperson Clayson Moniela.
This letter by the four U.S. Congress members is noted. However, it's important to emphasize that there is currently no decision by the State Department or the White House to move the AGOA forum from South Africa. President Cyril Ramaphosa's special envoy recently visited the United States of America to meet and explain South Africa's active non-aligned position on the Russia-Ukraine conflict to key stakeholders and decision makers.
The ANC has had long ties with Moscow, which during the Soviet Union days supported the anti-apartheid movement. Some analysts say punishing Pretoria could drive it further away from the West and more firmly into the China-Russia camp. Hatung thinks that could be where South Africa under the ANC is headed anyway. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Former President Donald Trump remained defiant following his not guilty plea in a Florida courtroom yesterday. The Republican presidential frontrunner is facing 37 federal felony counts, including illegally retaining classified information and obstructing justice. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kuswara has this report.
A defiant Donald Trump made a stop at a popular Cuban restaurant in Miami to greet supporters.
Food for everyone. Food for everyone.
Following his arraignment where he pleaded not guilty Tuesday, the first former U.S. president to face federal charges spoke later from his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey.
Today we witness the most evil and heinous abuse of power in the history of our country. Very sad thing to watch. A corrupt sitting president had his top political opponent arrested on fake and fabricated charges.
Hundreds of supporters and protesters were outside the Miami court, where Trump was arraigned on 37 felony counts, including willfully retaining more than 100 classified documents, some related to U.S. nuclear and defense plans, and conspiring to obstruct justice. The FBI recovered the documents from his Florida home, Mar-a-Lago, last August. Justice Department Special Counsel Jack Smith was appointed to lead the federal investigation.
Our nation's commitment to the rule of law sets an example for the world. We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone.
Smith said he's seeking a speedy trial, but it may be months before it begins. Trump is running again for president in 2024 and is the Republican frontrunner. An Ipsos ABC News poll shows that while Americans view the new charges as more serious than those brought in late March by a Manhattan grand jury over hush money allegedly paid to adult movie star Stormy Daniels before the 2016 election, the public remains split on whether Trump should be charged with a crime.
I don't think that Trump's position in the lead of the Republican primary is likely to be shook by any of this, but I do think these potentially have an impact, if he does end up being the nominee, on his ability to win the general election by damaging his standing with independents.
47% of Americans believe the charges are politically motivated, according to the same Ipsos poll.
To me, I think this is a travesty. It's surreal.
If proven guilty, Trump could face prison time. Patsy Wida-Kuswara, VOA News, Washington.
The UN Refugee Agency reports the number of people who have been forcibly displaced by war, persecution, human rights abuses, and climate change reached an all-time high of 108.4 million last year, and the number has jumped in the first 6 months of this year. Lisa Schlein is in Geneva, where the UNHCR released its flagship annual report, Global Trends in Forced Displacement 2022.
Last year's record number of forcibly displaced people has been smashed by new figures showing that the fighting in Sudan has pushed the current global total to a staggering 110 million. The UNHCR reported Wednesday the sharp rise in the number of people forced to flee their homes was driven by the war in Ukraine, revised estimates for Afghan refugees, and the outbreak of new conflicts, especially in Sudan. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi says the growing number of forcibly displaced is being met with greater hostility toward refugees around the world.
We see pushbacks. We see tougher and tougher immigration or refugee admission rules. We see in many countries a criminalization of immigrants and refugees, blaming them for everything that has happened and so forth.
The report finds refugees, people who cross an international border for security reasons, account for 35.3 million of the forcibly displaced. Most of the others are people displaced inside their home countries by conflict and violence. Grandi says, despite perceptions to the contrary, most displaced people around the world are hosted in low and middle-income countries.
I think the prevailing rhetoric is still that all the refugees go to the rich countries. This is actually wrong. It's quite the opposite. 70% of the refugees, meaning of those 35 million, actually flee to the country next to their country. Most of them actually want to go back home.
The report finds 52% of refugees and other people in need of international protection come from just three countries, Syria, Ukraine, and Afghanistan. With 3.6 million refugees, Turkey remains the largest refugee hosting country in the world. The Global Trends report says countries in sub-Saharan Africa host one in five of all refugees globally. The largest number, 4.7 million, were hosted in East Africa, the Horn of Africa, and the Great Lakes region. The Sudan conflict, which began in April, already has displaced close to 2 million people, with many of them crossing into neighboring nations. The report says 6 million refugees and internally displaced people returned to their countries and areas of origin in 2022. It notes the United States last year became the largest recipient of new individual asylum claims in the world, followed by Germany, Costa Rica, Spain, and Mexico. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Greek shipping ministry says at least 78 people drowned in the Aegean Sea today after a large fishing vessel carrying migrants sank off the southern coast of Greece. It's the deadliest incident involving migrants off the coast of Greece since the height of the migration crisis 8 years ago. The Greek Coast Guard said at least 100 people were rescued, but the death toll would likely rise. The Coast Guard said the boat became unstable about 50 miles southwest of the city of Pylos after authorities were alerted to its unusual movements yesterday. It added that the boat declined an offer of assistance, but cargo ships gave rescued migrants food and water. The reason it sank is unclear. The Greek shipping ministry said the boat left Tobruk, Libya, and was traveling to Italy. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays.